It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome back to Money for Lunch. Good to have you guys back here. It's, is it the third week of January already? I think so. Yeah, we're good to go. Third week. All right. So, first question out of the, out of the gate. How are you doing on your New Year's goals? Historically, 70%, some huge number, 70 plus percent are off their goals by the 15th of January. So here I am checking on you on the 18th of January. What's happening? What are you doing with your goals? How are you managing your emotions to make your goals happen? This is really what it's all about as far as making your goals happen. It's all about having the mental toughness, which is another way for saying emotionally committed to making your goals happen. That's really what it's all about. So the why is more important than anything you know. In fact, how you feel is more important than what you know. For example, we know that smoking is bad, but yet millions of people smoke. Millions of people who are educated on the facts and know that cigarettes will probably hurt them or kill them or is poisoning their system, but they don't care about the facts. They only care about how it makes them feel. And how does it make them feel? It makes them feel cool. It makes them feel accepted. It makes them feel loved. So how you feel is more important than what you know. You know that eating cake is going to throw you off your game. But yet, at the moment, cake makes you feel something. So I just want you to think about that. I want you to think about how you feel is more important than what you know in any scenario. How you feel determines how successful you're going to be in the moment. For example, I remember when I was a young father coming home and I'd be in a bad mood. This is before I learned how to manage my emotions, right? And so all of a sudden, you know, I come home. My two young boys want to greet me with, as young kids want to greet their fathers, you know, with all the love and enthusiasm. Oh, dad's home, dad's home. And instead of reacting with love and being totally cool and being in the moment, I shouted at them to give me a couple of seconds. Let me just get in the house. Let me just, you know, kind of touch base before you guys jump all over me. And I yelled at them. And because I yelled at them, it killed the moment. I was unsuccessful in the moment. And how you feel determines how successful you're going to be. Now, let's see. Our first guest, Jason Drone, is having some technical difficulties. That's why I'm kind of looking at his text message. All right, so let's see. Let's see if we can make this happen for Jason Drone. All right, so how you feel is more important than what you know. So in that moment, if I would have known how to manage my emotions, I would have come in the house and I would have been ready to give them the love that they were willing to give me, right? But I took that love for granted, and that's why I yelled at them. So I failed in that moment and vowed never to do it again. So how you feel is more important than what you know. Okay, check this out. We've been doing the 13 things that mentally strong people don't do. We are on number 9. And this is so important. Resentment is like anger that remains hidden and bottled up. They don't resent other people's success. Oh, never mind. Well, that's number nine. So that's number nine. They don't resent other people's success. Number 10, which is the one I apologize. We're at number 11. I was just informed. We're at number 11. Here it is, guys. They don't fear alone time. I don't know what the deal is, but some of us do fear alone time, right? We're afraid to let a conversation go awkward or silent. It's another type of alone time. Creating time to be alone with your thoughts can be a powerful experience, instrumental in helping you reach your goals. Amy Morin writes, becoming mentally strong requires you to take time out from your busyness of daily life to focus on growth. So The Daily Edge, which is a book. Hold on if I can find it. Hold on. Here it is. Hold on. Bear with me. I got it right here. So The Daily Edge, it's simple strategies to increase efficiency and make an impact every day. That's by David Horsager. So he specifically gives himself and all his employees an hour of alone time at their office so they can plan and grow. I'm throwing that out there because it's not just for you, it's for your employees. It's maybe for you. Maybe what if you come home and you give your spouse an hour to be alone? 13 Things That Mentally Strong People Do is a book written by Amy Morin, and you can find it wherever good books are sold, including Amazon. I want you to go out there and get that book because I think it will change the way you think about a lot of things. So 13 things mentally strong people don't do. Solitude at the office can increase productivity. Alone time may increase your empathy. Spending time alone sparks creativity. Solitary skills are good for mental health. Solitude offers restoration. So number 11, they don't fear alone time. And we're going to jump right into it with my good friend, Jason Drone. As you guys, we're fortunate enough to have Jason as one of our regular contributors. Jason and I have been working on this show together now for over a year, which is like amazing. But Jason, what I love about Jason is, first of all, he gives tons of value for free. I mean, real, useful value. Jason Drone has been marketing online for 8 years, working with literally thousands of businesses and thousands of entrepreneurs through his courses and done-for-you services. Prior to Jason Drone becoming an internet marketing sensation, he was a Pepsi truck driver. He was a working-class stiff like you and I. He was just out there making good money as a Pepsi truck driver. And he started doing marketing, internet marketing on the side. And I think it was, I don't know if it was a few months or maybe, I think it was less than a year before he was able to transition from being Pepsi truck driver to a full-time stay-at-home dad and just work from home. Anyway, he's also best known for his quickest path to cash strategy, where he cuts years off testing and development out of his clients' lives. Jason Drone, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Thank you so much. How are you doing?
Man, I'm doing great. I'm excited to have you on the show. Excited for 2016, man. How is it there?
It's going to be a big year.
It's going to be a huge year, man.
It's cold and snowy in Pennsylvania.
I was going to say Erie, Pennsylvania. I was going to ask you. Okay, so yeah, we expect for Erie in January, right? Cold and really cold.
Yes. Yeah. I said when I woke up, it was like 14 degrees. You know.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah. You in Arizona?
All right. So you know what? I started. Go ahead.
Speaking of alone time, when you were talking about that, I am personally not in the slightest scared of alone time. Like, you know, I was outside blowing the snow out of the driveway for about an hour this morning, just alone time.
Well, you know what? And that sounds funny to a lot of people, but that's one of the things I did enjoy about living in snow country is I didn't mind shoveling the sidewalk or the driveway. And
yep.
I didn't even, you know, I tried using a snowblower, but it made too much noise. I like the solitude. I'm like you. I like the solitude and the invigoration that you get from shoveling snow.
Yeah, it makes sense. I do my neighbor's driveway, like, whatever, you know. Oh, you need the driveway plowed? I'll get it.
Absolutely. You know, when you're on a roll, man, it's the best. Now, hey, real quick, as a Pepsi truck driver, you started doing internet marketing on the side. How long before you were doing this full time?
Let's see. That's kind of a loaded question. It took about 6 months once I figured out what I was doing. It took about 6 months to start doing it well. It took about 2 years to get to that point. So, I mean, there was a lot of, you know, not very awesome, you know, spaghetti dinners and not having enough money to, you know, buy food and all that stuff. That was 8 years ago. So it took a little while to get started. But, you know, one of the things about living in Pennsylvania is nobody here understands what I do. You know, so it's not like I'm in Austin or San Diego or there's internet marketers around. Not to mention, it wasn't necessarily like, I mean, this was a decade ago, you know. So
right.
At the time, you know, even I went to a college and said, do you have an internet marketing like course or something that can help me get jump-started? They had nothing. Then, you know, there was no digital media, digital marketing, anything. So there's a lot of learning that took place. And there's still a lot of learning, you know, as
sure.
with anything. But it took a little while, you know. And it was kind of one of those things, like I started, I learned how to put up websites and use WordPress and stuff for myself. And then the next logical step was to do it for other people. So I would charge, you know, a couple $100 to build a business, you know, a website for a business. And I thought undercutting all the competition was a valid pursuit in making money. And of course that is not, you know, moved into the affiliate marketing world because around 2009, you know, everybody stopped paying their bills, you know, so if you had somebody on retainer for hosting and support for a website, then you were the first one who was getting cut. So I switched to affiliate marketing and that's where I really kind of started doing very well. And since, as you know, have moved from affiliate marketing to software. So,
yes.
It's kind of been the transition.
Well, you know what? Now, so let's talk about this because, first of all, I hope that everybody caught that it wasn't an overnight. His overnight success was a couple of years in the making, and sometimes it does take. You know, it takes that, right? Trial and error. You're trying to figure it out. There's so much information overload. So I say that because there's this hype out there that, hey, you do this course and just in 3 minutes, you're going to learn how to make millions of dollars from the internet by, you know, whatever. And
yeah, that stuff always goes away. You know,
yeah.
And it's funny because it took, you know, I don't see, like, in looking over the last decade of my professional internet existence, I don't, you know, I think personally it took me 9 years to get into what I was supposed to be doing all along, which is software. You know what
right.
I mean? Like all of that was just kind of filler experience. Sure, we made a bunch of money, but, you know, and we were afforded a certain lifestyle, but I mean, software is something I love. It is my calling, and it took me 9 years to get to that point. You know, so up until that time, when you just fall in love with something, you know, because there's so many different ways of making money online, you know,
yes.
It's just like there's so many different ways of making money in the real world, you know, like you can go and get a job and work at any number of different places for any number of different hours. You can work 60 hours a week, 40 hours a week. You can go to school for it. You don't have to go to school for it. You can be in manufacturing. you know, online is kind of the same thing. Like there's affiliate yes. marketing and there's CPA marketing and there's you sell your own stuff and digital courses, and software and physical products on Amazon. And there's so many different things that you can do. It's really just about figuring out which one works with you and, you know, the way you want to live your life. You know, can you afford some risk where you put a bunch of stuff in inventory? Or do you have a certain experience that other people will benefit from? Can you understand processes a little bit differently than everybody else and put something together to make their lives easier? You know, there's lots of different ways to attack it. You know, it's just about figuring out which one works for you.
Yes, no, absolutely correct. And I like what you just said there, that it took you almost a decade to find the thing that really resonated with your heart, and that is building software. And, you know, you've been doing that last couple of 2 or 3 years, and every time you come out with mm-hmm. something, you're super excited about it, you're geeking out all over it, and everything you do mm-hmm. is top-notch. And so, but again, it's a journey, and like you said, it took you 9 years to get there. All right, so let's switch subjects for a second, because I wanted to ask you this, because I think this is so brutally important. This is, I think, the question that most people ask, and that is, what is it that my prospects want? How do I find out what my customers really want? And how do you find out? What is the answer to that?
You know what? I ask them. And it's a little counterintuitive. I mean, the first ebook that I ever, you know, the first, let's say, digital product that I ever put out there was an ebook called Client Crusher, and it was how to pick up offline clients. And it got about, it was like a 20-page ebook, and I didn't have any money for marketing at the time. So what I did was I just gave it to a friend and said, put this in your membership site. And send a couple emails to it, give it away for free, you know, that way I can start building up an email list, you know, and getting some prospects in the door. And I gave it away for free, and as soon as somebody downloaded it, they were able to download it, read it, you know, whatever. The next day they got an email from me through their autoresponder that said, hey, please answer these three questions. And if you answer these three questions, I'll give you the free video product, you know, the free thing that I'm going to create based on your three questions. And the three questions were, what did you like most about the ebook? What did you like right. least about the ebook? And what value, you know, what problem did this ebook solve for you? And based on those three questions, I was able to create a video product and make the ebook better. So that was the first digital product that I ever created. But it was a survey. I just asked them. And every time, you know, usually 3-4 times a year, we'll have our whole list fill out a survey and say, what do you want? You know, what is your biggest challenge? What can we help you with? So that always kind of recenters us back to, this is the problem that people are having. This is, you know, so I either need to create a solution for it or I need to find a solution for it. So we just ask them. And the biggest thing now is that 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 3 years ago, you know, it was a lot easier to build an email list. Like you could just put a form up online, have basic, you know, sign up for our free newsletter and you would get email. You know, people would put their email in the box. Now people are pretty guarded, you know, about giving, they'll like a Facebook page, but their email address is a little bit more intimate form of communication, no different than a phone number was, you know. Now you can barely get a phone number.
Right.
So what we did was we actually kind of flipped it on its head a little bit, and we started asking our new prospects very early on, you know, what is your biggest challenge? And we kind of camouflage it a little bit. Like somebody will sign up for an ebook, they'll give us their email address, you know, for a free report or a free trial for a piece of software or something. And then immediately the next page, we have them fill out a survey. And we take it, it's a multi-page survey. The first question is always very low barrier of entry. Something like, are you male or female? How big is your email list size? How many times do you post on your website a week? You know, something that is just like, you know, we're not asking for any personal information. all we're doing is saying in your daily activity, you know, or are you male, female? You know what I mean? Like, these are all
right.
very low barrier of entry questions. And then we move them through a sequence of pages, a sequence of survey questions that become, that move them towards the answers that we want. You know what I mean?
Right.
So from, for example, Scriply is an email, autoresponder writing service, you know, it's a piece of software that writes your emails for you. And what we've been doing is we'll have somebody sign up for a PDF, for a report. The next question is, how big is your email list? And that's usually pretty, you know, I got a small email list or medium or large or whatever, you know. So they'll just click an image and, you know, with some text below it that says, you know, I have a list between 2 and 10,000 people. Okay, next question. Next question is, what do you want them to do? Well, I want them to buy something or watch a video or set up a call with me. And they just click the button, you know, click their answer. The next question, what is your biggest challenge with email marketing? Do you not have enough time? Do you not write? You know, so they pick their answer. And then the fourth step is they watch a sales video. And that sales video takes into consideration all the answers that they just gave me and then kind of makes a custom sales video. So it's pretty cool stuff. It's actually going to be the next piece of software that we do. It won't be released for a while, but we're going to help automate the whole process because not only are you able to sell more effectively, but you're also able to integrate that to your email marketing or your retargeting ads or whatever and market to them based on the answers, based on the challenges that they're having in their business, their daily life right now. So you're not sending them stuff that they're not going to open because they're going to open every email you send, and it's going to be perfect because you know what challenges they're facing.
Absolutely. Now, I want to recap this. So you send them a survey, and it's typically what, like a short survey, right? Maybe three or four.
Questions.
Okay, three or four questions, and then. Depending on what they say from that survey, you'll make a product that they're asking for or a service that they're asking for. It's like a no-brainer.
Right.
And the great thing about this is that you can do this for an online business. You can do this for a brick-and-mortar business. And this is so important to survey your customers. I'm thinking of this company that we all used to probably use at one point called Blockbuster, and they assumed that their customers were happy.
Yeah.
And they didn't survey their customers. And this other company called Netflix said, hey, let's try this. And to make it sad, even sadder, I'm sure that my people are tired of me telling this story or hearing this story. Netflix made an offer to Blockbuster to let Netflix be their online version of Blockbuster, and Blockbuster laughed at them. And but my point being is, what would have happened if they would have surveyed their list? They would have gotten that information saying, "Hey, I'm using Netflix more often. I like this idea of a home delivery service." They still would have been here. Think about it. To me, that's a great example. They assumed, they did not survey their list, and they failed to provide the customers with what they wanted.
Right. Absolutely. And it's every business. Every business can make use of surveys no matter what. You know, the trick is, and there's a certain piece, you know, there's a conversion piece. So if somebody, you know, if somebody lands on and doesn't answer the first question, they don't do you much good. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you want to get people moving through your survey. And the best way to do it is a very low barrier of entry, you know, question one is something that they can answer quickly. That there's no really, you know, ulterior motive. There's nothing, you know, you're not collecting any personal information other than are you male or female, or other than, you know, how many times a week do you work out, you know, one,
right.
two, three, seven. And So that's the it's you need to.
Well, okay. So let me ask you this.
Somebody
okay.
started.
All right. So you're saying that the first question should be something, again, not non-personal, easy to answer. They don't have to think about it. Are you male or female? Boom. Do you work out? You know, how often do you work out? And one of the things to this is that once they start filling out their survey, they tend to finish the survey.
Right. That's the whole, you know, that psychological component is the whole piece. That's why there's multiple steps and multiple pages, you know, because you have that whole micro commitment action. You tend to finish what you start, especially when something is very low barrier. You know what I mean? That's why you kind of hide the meat of your question, you know, the one that you want them to answer, step three or step four, you know, right before the very end where you actually take action on that answer if you decide to take action on that answer. You know, it might just be that you're collecting data, and that's cool.
Right. Now, okay, so I want to clarify this for our audience. When you say multiple pages, you're not saying you have, you know, 20 questions or 5 or 10 questions on each
right.
page.
No.
One page may be just one or two questions.
Yes, one page may be just one or two questions. And it might even be, you know, depending on the – there's all kinds of survey software out there. I mean, there's WooFoo and SurveyMonkey, and, you know, and a lot of them are designed to appear – you know, the next question appears when you answer the one before it. But you don't ever want to overwhelm somebody, especially when you're not giving them anything. Like, there's all kinds of, you know, fill out the survey and you might get $5 or, you know, you'll be entered into a chance to win an Amazon gift card. And none of that stuff really works. You know, none of it doesn't matter the prize or the payoff or whatever. You know, the thing that works is really just giving them a reason to fill out the survey. And a perfectly valid reason is we want to serve you better as a customer. Or
absolutely,
we're going to deliver a customized action plan for you to take. And the customized action plan, that might be through email, that might be a video, you know, who knows.
And I don't know if you've ever done this. I've done this a couple of times. I learned this from somebody else, and I just thought it was kind of a neat thing. And that is, if you know, once the survey is complete, I'll share the results with you. Is another incentive, because we all would like to know what everybody else is up to.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And the biggest thing is to take action on their responses. You know, so if you're trying to make your product or service better, then take action on those responses. I mean, actually look at the data a couple days later and say, this is what we're going to do based on it, or at least put a meeting together and start talking about it. If it's a, you know, putting them into one of the reasons we're creating our software is because we want them to be added to an email sequence that fires off specifically about that problem. So if somebody goes through our Scriptly survey and they tell us they don't have time to write email copy, well, the next 6 emails that they're going to get are how to write copy without being a copy expert, or, you know, like how to write an email in less than 3 minutes, or, you know, like that kind of stuff. Everything's going to have a time component. Whereas they answer, I don't have the skills to write email copy, then okay, then we're going to send them a couple articles on how to write email copy, you know, the steps to breaking down an email autoresponder sequence and what it's supposed to be doing for a prospect, and then going that way.
Yeah, I love it. I love it, man. It's great stuff. Also, you guys can check out Scriptly.org.
Mm-hmm.
Scriptly.org. And this is your latest, most, I think, very innovative piece of software, where you kind of mentioned it a couple of times, where it actually does all the writing for you. There's also a webinar component to it, Scriptly.org. Check it out. Jason Drone, thank you so much for stopping by. It's been a blast, my friend.
Thanks. I'll talk to you soon.
You bet. All right. Good stuff there from our friend Jason Drone on how to know what your clients want and then give it to them. It's not that hard. Sometimes we just make it hard. It's just the way it is. And if, again, the great thing about surveys is that you can use them in any type of business, no matter who your customers are.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com.
saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right. We are back. My next guest, Tom Lemansky. Tom Lemansky is an executive coach. His company, Chicago Executive Coaching, works with successful leaders who want to become more successful, less stressed, and more fulfilled. He started his coaching practice in 2001. Prior to that, Tom had an accomplished executive career managing a 24-hour-a-day manufacturing facility and leading a successful turnaround of consumer product marketing company. Tom has served executives in over 50 different industries that range from financial service companies to pharmaceutical manufacturers to global consulting firms to local construction contractors. You can find out more about Tom and his team at Chicago Executive Coaching. Tom Lemansky, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Well, thank you, Bert. Great to be here.
All right, so I got to ask you this. Here you are. You're working for this 24-hour-a-day manufacturing facility. You're an executive with this firm. Life is good. Why make the switch? Why leave that company and start this profession of coaching?
Great question. The answer is that the manufacturing company and the marketing firm that we acquired, I was mixing business and family in that I was a family member. And
gotcha.
It took me maybe longer than it should have, but I finally figured out that the challenges of mixing business and family weren't working for me. That's the short answer.
Yeah. You know what? I've been in the same situation. Sometimes it's really tough. And if you're one of those individuals who can mix family with business, God bless you. That's awesome. It didn't work for me, but I know some people who've been doing it for several generations. I mean, you got the grandfather, the father, the grandkids, the great grandkids, and they're all in there. And I'm thinking, man, so I don't know, maybe my family was so dysfunctional. I couldn't handle it anyway, either. I left. So I'm with you on that one, Tom.
So, Bert, I guess to add to that, for the last 14-plus years, I have worked at finding answers to some of the challenges that I didn't have back where I used to be in terms of looking at conflict and behavior and the lack of what we'll call soft skills and all that. And so today I bring that to my clients, most of which are not family businesses, which is a whole other story, but that's where I am today.
Sure, sure. Great. All right, so let me ask you this. When you started ChicagoExecutiveCoaching.com, what did you have? What were your qualifications that you thought you could bring to the table to help other executives? I'm going to kind of put you on the spot there.
I like being on the spot, so thank you. Well, first of all, I'd been there and done that. Second
right.
of all, I now had some tools and a determination to use the tools to help people basically go from look at where they are, determine where it is they want to be, and understand where that gap is, and start to address the obstacles that are keeping them from getting to where they want to be in terms of what we'll call soft obstacles, the intangible obstacles to achievement, which from a skill standpoint, that might be you need to be a better communicator, you need to be a better delegator, you need to be more effective with your decisions. So I had some tools for helping people develop soft skills and both skill sets and mindsets that will address those things that keep you from getting to where you wanted to go. Combine that with the executive experience I had, the experience of understanding that I got from I could thank my family members for the conflict that they, the experience that they gave me, and I bring that
sure.
to my engagements.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I like that. I like that a lot because working with family, in especially when there's all the different, conflicts.
Well, you can have generational differences. You can have
yes.
sibling rivalries.
Yes.
And maybe you don't have that in some of the scenarios where I'm working with today, which is mostly in larger corporations. But within teams, there are dynamics within teams when we don't have the same agenda. We're not on the same page, and maybe we lack some of the communication skills and delegation and time management skills that we need to get us where we want to go.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, now, and you mentioned, you refer to them as soft skills for the most part. So when you're referring to soft skills, what are we talking about? We're talking about communications. We're talking about what? Attitude. What are we talking about?
Well, first of all, let's say what's the opposite of that, which is hard skills, which is technical knowledge, the technical expertise you have, whether you know accounting or you know law or you know manufacturing, whatever it may be. So to answer your question more directly is things like communication, and there are different aspects of communication. You know, you have a role of a listener and as a sender, both written and verbal. Beyond that, delegation. That is both a skill set and a mindset.
Yes.
Time management, understanding motivation of both yourself and others, goal achievement, decision-making, problem-solving, focus, accountability, all the soft things that go into making you more effective as a leader.
Yeah, you know, and it's amazing to me because these soft skills really, to me, are probably the most important. You know, in the beginning of the show, I was talking about mindset, how important the mindset is, and the fact that your attitude or how you feel is, to me, more important than what you know. And so we've all heard stories of people who didn't know any better and they achieved great levels of success, or maybe they knew better. They were told it's impossible, you're never going to do it, and because they had this mental toughness, they were committed, because they had self-belief, which is another soft skill, they were able to achieve these outrageous goals. And so it seems to me that these soft skills are the most important skills. Tom, what do you think?
Well, you're preaching to the choir there, Bert. In fact, I believe that as you move up the corporate ladder, what you're really being paid for is not so much the technical knowledge that you have, but your ability to handle people issues, to be able to get it. The essence of leadership, this is an Eisenhower quote, the essence of leadership is getting other people to do what you want done or need done because they want to do it. It's a thing I call transfer of ownership.
Yes.
Conceptually speaking, let's just look at rental cars. No one ever washes their rental car. And so as a leader, we have ideas, and we need those ideas to be owned. If people are just renting your ideas, what happens? They don't care about them, and it's less likely that what you need done is going to get done. So, you know, as you enhance your influencing skills, what I'm helping people to do is help them transfer the ownership ideas from them to their followers to where they want to do it.
Yes, and this transfer of ownership, I think that is, you know, that is the ultimate goal, right? And this whole leadership concept works both in the family room as well as the boardroom. If you can get your children to take ownership of their chores, those chores are going to get done better and more often. Same thing at the office.
Yes. And that said, if we can just take I want my child to sweep the floor, okay? Well, you can say, you can say this is what I want done. It, as you look at delegation, there's a how, there's a what, and a why involved. And typically when we delegate, we just talk about what and how.
Yes.
So if it's sweeping the floor, sweep the floor. Well, that's what. All right, now you move the broom back and forth. That's how. But why are we sweeping the floor? And if we take that into a work environment, it's like, you know what? Our customers expect a clean environment when they come to visit us, be it a store or an office, whatever it is. And so you are responsible for, as it relates to floors, I'll give you the resources you need or tell me what resources you need, but your job here is clean floors for the purpose of creating a positive customer impression and a positive impression for the people that work here.
Yes.
You know, that's the why we're sweeping the floors.
Yes. No, and I love that. I think that's a great distinction, because sometimes as leaders, quote, bosses, quote, parents, just get it done because I told you so. And that's not always
the
best. I mean,
and who owns that task, right?
Yeah. Who owns that path? But, and, you know, and don't get me wrong, sometimes you just have to get in their face. But I think that is the exception, not the rule. I think most of the time, if you're a good leader, a good parent, you can get them to do what you need done and have them own it. What was that quote again? What was that Eisenhower quote that you mentioned?
The essence of leadership is getting other people to do what you want done because they want to do it.
Yes.
And so, you know, the follow-up to the how, what, and why, when there is no why, there is no way.
Ooh, I like that. When there is no why, there is no way.
When there's no why, there's no way.
Yes,
okay?
I love that.
And so as we look to delegate, be it with our children or be it with our subordinates, and I got another reference on this is, I don't know to what extent you or your audience is familiar with Simon Sinek and his book and his TED Talk, Start With Why. But it's a potential game changer, and I use that as a tool that, okay, now maybe we've seen the TED Talk, we've read the book, we love it. How do we start to get that ingrained in our routine communication? How do we build more productive habits to start with why?
Yes, absolutely. No, I love that. And you know, why is the ultimate power in the universe. Back to, and the reason why I'm a big proponent of why, because why is an emotion. You know, why are you doing this? Well, I'm doing this for the kids. I'm doing this for the customers. I'm doing this because it makes me feel good. I'm doing this because, you know, the why is the ultimate power in the universe, because if you have a big enough why, then mountains get moved. The impossible happens. We're going to put a man on the moon. Well, that's just crazy. But the why was so big. A, we wanted to beat the Russians. A, we wanted to prove it to ourselves. B, you know, we had to be held accountable to our president at that time. We wanted to prove that we could do it. All those different whys that were in that equation put a man on the moon. And I like what you said. If there is no why, there is no way.
Now, I'll borrow another from my treasure chest of quotes. There's a Japanese proverb, and you might have heard it. Vision without action is a daydream. Action without vision is a nightmare. So let's go back to your, let's go to, you know, we're going to go to the moon by whatever the target date was for that goal. I mean, he gave us a goal. He gave us a vision. And
right.
And we supported it with action. And when you have the two of those things, now you take the other side of that coin, and it's, you know, this is what happens when we delegate without a why, right? It's action. So action without vision is a nightmare. So what vision, as you delegate, what vision have you given the people that you want to transfer ownership of the task? What vision have you given them? What's the why?
Yep, I love it. Tom,
and
we're out of time.
If you look at the word, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish up. Go ahead. Finish up.
If we look at the word motivation, the key word in motivation is motive. What's the motive?
Absolutely. Tom, we're out of time. Good stuff. I'd love to bring you back and talk more about why and business as well. Tom Lemansky, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Thanks, Bert. Enjoyed it.
Good stuff there from Tom Lemansky, ChicagoExecutiveCoaching.com, and all about the why. I love it. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back with the amazing Marshall Goldsmith right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
All right. We are back. My next guest is a return guest, Marshall Goldsmith. He's been on the show a few times, always an amazing individual to talk to. Marshall Goldsmith is an executive educator, coach, and author. He has been recognized at the Thinkers 50 ceremony in London as one of the top 10 most influential management thinkers in the world and the top 10 rated executive coach for the last 4 years. One of the reasons that he's so highly rated, so highly sought after, and such an influential individual in the management consulting arena is that he's one of these guys who started this concept of no results, no pay. So when you hire Marshall Goldsmith to be your executive educator, coach, or mentor, if he doesn't get you the results you want, you pay nothing. He has to do the work first, then you pay. Marshall Goldsmith, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Great to talk to you again.
It's always good to have you here. I'm always excited to have you here. And I wanted to come in and have you talk about, you know, some people call it self-talk. I call it affirmations because I think that this is something that that we sometimes get confused about and sometimes we're not aware of them. And I wanted to get your thoughts about affirmations.
Well, what they can and cannot do. I mean, sometimes this is oversold. You know, the book The Secret kind of implies that if I say it, it will happen. And it's based on some very flawed research. You know, I interviewed Jimmy, he had cancer and he visioned it went away and it did. And, you know, Mary visioned she'd be the movie star and she was. And Harry dreamed of being the basketball team champion and he was. There's a problem with the research. They didn't interview the dead people. And they didn't interview the failures, and they didn't interview all the 80-year-old waitresses in Hollywood who visioned being movie stars. Well, affirmations to me, and I'm not a disbeliever, I am, they improve your odds on getting better. So to the degree you can envision something will happen, you believe it's going to happen, and you focus on it, it's really going to help you get better. But don't naively assume that somehow I don't have to work, and all I have to do is envision it, and it will occur. That's just complete nonsense.
Yes. And if you look at the reverse of this, because typically affirmations are positive. Hey, I'm going to do this. Like you said, I'm going to be the movie star. I'm going to be the basketball person. Great, great. And if you look at the reverse, which is negative thinking, you know, I'm never going to get the job. I'm never going to get the part. I never get to play basketball. And, of course, that doesn't work 100% of the time either. But again, I want to use your analogy. I think that it creates the odds of it not happening because you're not open to it.
Exactly right. Yeah. You may say, I'm never going to win and still win, but you've dramatically reduced your odds on winning.
Yes. Yes. It's an amazing thing. Now, because to me, affirmations, and you've already kind of alluded to this a little bit, is part of visualization to me. You can't have one without the other. Now, some people spend more time visualization, doing visualization activities, and But if you're doing an affirmation, either, you know, for that brief, you know, second or two, you're kind of visualizing, you know, making the basketball or making the basket or hitting the goal or whatever. So I think that visualization is one of those key components that a lot of people, including myself, don't use as well as we could. What's your take on visualization?
Well, let me tell you what I think we need to do. I think you need to do more than that.
Okay.
For example, I believe in something called the daily question process, where every day I go back and review my behavior relative to a series of questions or what are most important in my life. And just the more we can keep on top of things, the better. And it is very hard for us to maintain consciousness as we go through the day. One test I give myself every day is, what percent of yesterday were you conscious? Now, I'm probably averaging 40 to 50%, but I think I probably overrate myself even at that. Let's face it. Most of our lives we're unconscious. We're just sort of like pinball thing, bouncing around from place to place. We're not really thinking about what we're doing. We're lost. It's very hard to maintain this sense of consciousness. So I think you need to combine the two. One, you need to have the affirmation. You need to have the vision, and you need to set the goal. But then, two, you need to realize that as that day progresses, it's very hard to keep in your head. By the way, there's something I talk about in my book, Triggers. It's called the planner-doer bias. The planner who's sitting down planning that healthy foods diet is not the hungry doer at the end of the day that's staring at the chocolate cake.
I like that. Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
And
okay,
the more we put in structure and discipline in our lives, the more we're likely to become the doer, not just the planner. When I teach my classes, I have a fun exercise. I'll say, who needs to be a better listener? And half the class will raise their hand. I'll pick a guy who obviously looks like a bad listener. I'll say, Joe, how many years have you been needing to be a bad listener? I'll say, 30 years. You've been trying to fix this. I'll say, repeat after me, my name is Joe. My name is Joe. I need to be a better listener. I've not fixed this by myself in 30 years. Let's face reality. I'm not going to fix it by myself next week. I need help, and it's okay. I need help, and it's okay. Well, once we set the affirmation, that doesn't mean we're going to do it by ourselves.
Right.
We often need help. And you know what? It's okay.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, the way I look at affirmations, and I'm glad you brought that up, is that, again, it just opens up your mind to getting that help. And you know, if you're out there and you're saying, hey, you know what, I'm moving towards my goals today, well, all of a sudden maybe you bump into somebody that normally you may not have been open to talking to, but today you are. And this guy helps you move forward in some manner, or gets you a hold of a book that helps you solve whatever.
I totally agree with you. And one thing I'm very proud of in my book, Triggers, 27 major CEOs endorsed the book. And what I'm proud of is 30 years ago, no CEO would have admitted wanting to have a coach. These are 27
yes.
big CEOs who not only admit they have a coach, they're proud to talk about it.
That's amazing. Yes, yes. And so what's so amazing about this is how, again, the landscaping has changed, right? People realize that, like you said, I can't do it alone. I need a little help. And that's okay.
It's okay. By the way, I pay a woman every day to call me. I pay her to call me every day to listen to her, listen to me read 32 questions and provide 32 answers that I wrote. So somebody said, why do you pay some woman to call you on the phone every day just to listen to you read questions you wrote and provide answers you wrote? Don't you know the theory about how to change behavior? I wrote the theory about how to change behavior. That's why I pay the woman to call me. I know how hard it is. It's hard for all of us. I'm no better than anybody else.
I like that. I like that. All right. So the 32 questions you referred to are also in the book Triggers, correct?
They are. Or if you want to get a copy of them, just send me an email, marshall@marshallgoldsmith.com. I'll send you a copy of them and an article about it.
I love it. I love it. Okay. So it's marshall@marshallgoldsmith.com.
And Marshall has two L's.
Mm-hmm. And you'll get the 32 questions. And so let's talk about
these
32
questions. So the key is for everybody to write your own questions.
Ah, okay. So what are some of the questions that you ask her when she calls you?
Well, no, Well, here's some of the questions for me every day. Let me give you my first six. I really love these first six.
Okay.
And they all begin with, did I do my best to? Did I do my best to? And the first one's going to tie back to your first question. Did I do my best to set clear goals? Well, you know, as you said, if you're not going to set a goal out there, it's highly unlikely you're going to achieve it. Number two, did I do my best to make progress toward achieving my goals? Number three, did I do my best to find meaning? Not did somebody give me meaning. Did I do my best to create meaning? Number four, did I do my best to be happy rather than waiting for someone else to make me happy? Number five, did I do my best to be fully engaged? And number six, did I do my best to build positive relationships? Six basic questions. We've done research on this. And again, any of your listeners who would like to participate in the research, send me an email. I'll sign them up. I've done research with thousands of people where we send people an email every day for 10 days and they test themselves. The results are amazing. Just by testing yourself every day on these six questions, 39% of the people got better at everything. 65% of the people got better on at least four of the six. 89% got better at one. 11% said they stay the same. And 0.4% said they got worse. Why? Every day they get me to focus not on what I cannot change, but what I can change.
All right. And so for everybody listening, the email is marshall@marshallgoldsmith.com. That is with two L's. I'm going to do this. I'm going to send you an email myself because I'm always about getting better. And I think that I'm intrigued by this. I've had you on the show a couple of times, and I think this would be a fun exercise. And what a great time to do it. We're all still hopeful that we're going to make some big changes in 2016. So I think that this will be great. And so I'm going to put on here 32 questions. Is that the right?
And then also I'll sign you up, put, and also six question research.
Okay. 32 questions.
Right. And then put six question research.
Question research. And this will be fun because we can also, have you come back and we can explore the results.
You can talk about what it was like for you.
Yeah. I love it.
And
I love it.
Those,
go ahead.
You write your own questions. Okay, let me ask you right now. Other than ones I said, what is one question you'd like to test yourself on every day? I think every day I should challenge myself.
Boy, that's a tough one because – okay, on your top six here is, did I do my best to set goals?
Yeah.
What was it? Okay, give me number two again.
Did I do my best to make progress toward achieving my goals?
Okay. So I guess if I was going to pick one for myself, I'd have to think about it and see.
Well, do you do affirmations yourself?
I do. So one of my affirmations is, I'm moving towards my goals today.
That's perfect. Well, all this does is give you a little test every day on how much progress you made.
So how much did I move towards my goals today?
Yeah, 1 to 10 scale. That would be a great one for you.
Oh, perfect. I love it. Yeah, mm-hmm. I like that. So any kind of goal that you have or any kind of thing that you want to get better at, you just make it into a question. How did I do my best today as far as staying on my diet, if that's your thing, or saving up for my vacation? What's that?
Did I do my best to be a good father today?
Oh, I love that.
Did I do my best to be a good husband?
I don't want to ask that question. No, I'm just kidding.
Now I'm meddling.
You know what? Real quick, though, I'm glad you brought this thing up because I think a lot of us overlook how our spousal relationship is, right? I mean, we set goals for our physical self, our spiritual self, our financial self, but sometimes we neglect our spousal relationship, and this is so important. Because just like you cannot stay in shape, you cannot stay in the same shape by doing the same exercises, just the one time. Well, your relationship can't stay in shape. You got to actively work at it.
I totally agree.
All right.
Let me ask you a question. I have a question. Do you believe in big companies, customer satisfaction is important?
Yes.
Should we ask our customers how we could get better?
Yes.
Should we listen to our good customers?
Yes, yes, we should.
And get better based on what they teach us?
Yes.
Have you been asking your partner how you can be a better partner?
I have not asked.
who's more important?
Absolutely, I agree with you. And so, I'm gonna accept your challenge. I'm gonna ask my spouse, what can I do to be a better spouse? I've been married to her. This will be 30 years. In May of this year, it'll be 30 years that we've been married together. We've been together, you know, of course, we dated a year before that. So, but bottom line, we've been together for, you know, 30 years. So, Marshall, I think it's high time I do that. I have not done that in a very, very, very long time.
That's wonderful.
So, and this is such a, like you said, it's so important. So if we're willing to do it for our customers and we're not willing to do it for our spouse or for our children, then we're missing the real deal.
Exactly. I completely agree.
I love it. I love it. So, all right. So I'm going to send you, six right here. I'm going to do it before we get off the show here. Okay. Email gone. Everybody can do the same thing. It's Marshall at Marshall Goldsmith. That's two L's, 32 questions, and sign me up for the 6-question research. That's only for those individuals who want to improve their lives. Marshall just gave you a little tiny example of how these questions can improve your lives. My spouse, my good wife, is going to have a better husband because I'm going to ask her these questions and I'm going to make it part of my routine. We can do that for our customers, our children, our spouse, anything that we want to get better at. These questions, are fantastic tools, especially if you believe in getting better and progressing, if you believe in visualization or affirmation. This is just an extension of that to just make you better. I love it.
Well, it's turning those affirmations into reality.
Yes. I'm going to add this experience to a book that I'm finishing up about dominating your mind. And there's a section in there about affirmations, and I'm going to take today's experience and type it up and put it in there. And obviously I'll give you the credit and reference the book Triggers as well. And Marshall, has been just a blast to have you back on the show. I can't wait to bring you back and talk about how the 6 questions had changed my life.
Thank you. It's great to talk with you.
All righty, sir. Thank you so much. Have yourself a good day.
Okay, bye-bye.
Good stuff there from Marshall Goldsmith, how asking these little questions can have a massive impact. The book is called Triggers by Marshall Goldsmith. I think it's just called Triggers. Anyway, just look Triggers, Marshall Goldsmith, you'll get it. And then send him an email, Marshall with 2 L's, Marshall@MarshallGoldsmith.com, and see how it changes your life. We'll bring you on the show to talk about it. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.